Welcome into the MTOM podcast. I'm Paul Yeager, joined today by Colleen Bradford Krantz. We're in studio, but really more our office. You're not sitting in your home office. I'm not sitting in mine. So when you hear me squeak in my chair, I'm just not used to these things that make noise. You're going to stand. Should I stand? How about I stand?
Yes, you're making a lot of noise over there, Paul.
I know. This is audio. I should be paying attention to this. So, all right, I've put you in a hard spot here, and I've asked all the market producers to do the same thing. Interview somebody influential in their life about agriculture. I'm sorry. Interview someone in their life that's influential about agriculture and why they ended up reporting on it. You had a couple of options, but one was pretty obvious right in front of you. Who was it?
My father, my dad, Jim Bradford.
And why was he, he's a guy we probably should just do a story on.
He, of course, would be the one I would choose, along with my mom, Mary Bradford, but he's the one who really was having us out there every day, helping with the cattle and hay and so on. So he was the sort of the one guiding us for the majority of the agricultural experience.
You mentioned your mother, and one of the discussion points you get into is your family and your siblings specifically.
Yes.
You're not one of, like, two. You're one of
nine times.
And there's a line towards the end of your discussion with your father that I thought was very, very fun. What was the name of the farm for the longest time?
Bradford Brothers. Where the girls do the work is the punchline. Did I steal your line?
No, that's what I wanted you to say. I just think that's hilarious, that where the girls do the work. And there's a fun little, I'm not going to spoil this story, I want you to listen to it, about how that line was misinterpreted one time.
Yes,
that made for a fun
And I
point.
Think I should explain, too, that we said I grew up, there was nine of us, but out of those nine, there was only one boy. So the Bradford Brothers was actually referring to my dad and his brother, who ended up really not being involved eventually. But it ended up with this, I shouldn't get into the story because, as you said, it comes up.
It comes up. Okay. What the first word I wrote down about your dad, and I think you... Do you call him stubborn? Does he call himself stubborn?
I probably did, and he probably didn't disagree. I can't remember how he responded, but yes, I do think I threw him under the bus there.
Yeah, that was fun. You are still involved with the farm in a way, right?
I help with promotional, especially around the time of their annual bull sale, and otherwise help with the website and so on.
And this was recorded before the $900,000 bull out of Nebraska came about.
That's right.
Your dad talked a little bit about price on some of the bulls. How far out of line is $900,000 to some of the bulls that your dad's been involved with?
Well, I think I think the numbers when he got some of his biggest sales, those were in the 70s. So it's hard for me to sort of correct that to today's dollars. But, I think we talked about one, if I remember right, did he say $250,000?
Yeah, that was one that was stuck in my head, $125,000 and $250,000.
Yeah. And so for those times, I think he had a partner on that one, and I thought that his partner had said that was a record at the time. I'm not sure I have proof of that, but I remember that being thrown out once and wondering if that was correct. But yeah, look at the numbers now. It's crazy.
And this was also before a lot of AI, right? And now, but your dad did get involved with AI?
Yeah, I remember my whole childhood that we were AIing. It was a lot of work. I remember spending hours out in the fields in the summer, getting this cow in and that cow when they're in heat. And so he was really into it pretty early. I mean, I think it existed in the right after World War II, but it really wasn't around much until probably the 60s and 70s, and really just starting to show up. And that's when he got in.
This is the MTOM Show podcast. That's Colleen Bradford Krantz. I'm Paul Yeager. If you have any feedback for us or story ideas, hit us up at markettomarket@iowapbs.org. And if you do like what we have to offer, like this, share this, subscribe, however you like to do it. What's the line you like to say, Colleen? That subscribe to Market to Market's YouTube channel and ring the notification bell to never miss out on content. Sound familiar?
That's right. I just practiced that line for Paul.
You'll hear that soon on videos from Market to Market. So, Colleen, I really like the way this turned out. And this is a double... I have two missions on this. One, I just want some different content that's not always me interviewing people. But two, I think it's important to have some historic things recorded.
Yeah, I really enjoyed doing this. And It was. It's also different when you interview, do an interview that's more personal. A little strange for me, you know, because you're so used to as a journalist setting personal stuff aside, and so it was different. But it was really fun to interview him, and I'm glad I had that chance.
I really liked it when you attacked him. I mean, you just came after him with all of those lines. Not know at this time, Jim?
You don't get the chance to put your dad in the spot like that very often, on a podcast. So,
all right, Colleen, thank you so much. Here's her conversation with her father on the MTM Show podcast.
Can you start out? I know all this, but we're going to tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, explain where you do your work and what you have on the farm.
Well, I live in Guthrie County, west of Guthrie Center, about 8 miles, and moved down there from flatland Calhoun County in Fonda, Iowa, 1970, and so we've been there long enough to be old-timers.
And yeah. tell everybody what you raise.
And we raise Angus cattle mainly, and Angus, Simmental Cross, breeding stock, and we've moved from flat country up in Calhoun County to rather rolling country where we are in Guthrie County, and it's quite well attuned to the cow enterprise in it. We have quite a bit of timber on it, so we have some windbreak, we have some shade, and we have lots of grass to kind of keep the soil where the good Lord put it initially.
And for those who are listening from other states, Calhoun County, where he grew up, is north, more north central, and Guthrie County is west central or southwest Iowa. And the ranch is called Brad Z Ranch. And I think we could talk a little bit about what the changes you've seen in the cattle industry. And you have a story about your father, about Grandpa, and a trip to Chicago. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, I graduated from Iowa State in 1956, and before that, I guess I was on the judging team, and we had fairly good success with that at that time. It was, we always fed some cattle out as well as those we raised around. At that time, we were in the Hereford business, or my dad was, and we fed cattle out and shipped them to Chicago by rail with a number of other neighbors. And in 1954, my dad and a couple of neighbors shipped in 3 or 4 loads of cattle to Chicago. And there was a record number on the market, 1954, there was 27,000 cattle on the market that Monday, which had been, I think maybe to this day, it's an all-time record. But we were in there, and the only thing going to the scale all morning long was black cattle. And we had Herefords. And my dad got, we finally sold late in the afternoon for about 2.5 hundredweight less than what most of the blacks were bringing at that time. So my dad got thinking about it, and I was on, as I said, on the judging team at the time, and I give my teammates all kinds of grief about, oh, if you want some of those little dinky cattle, you can get those blacks, but if you need something for something to tie in the backyard, why? But we'd rather, we were Herford proponents, you know. Anyway, shortly after that, then my dad went over to Pete Pratt's at Walnut, Iowa, and bought 2 Angus bulls and turned them into Herford cows.
So you couldn't give them a hard time anymore.
So I ate crow for quite a while.
I bet. So when you mean when you arrived in Chicago, they were buying the Angus first.
Oh yeah, that was the time the Packers were really going to the Angus about that time, and they were.
And that really started the shift for the. I mean, that was really the beginning of the shift toward Angus.
Yes, I think that was a major shift. And looking it over and trying to analyze the business I was in, I felt that there was a time coming when we were going to see much growth here cattle. And I think I showed a champion steering my county show, 50 or 51, somewhere in there. I think the steers at that time weighed about 900, a little over 900 pounds. And so I got looking. Of course, we were in the Angus business about this time. And so I got looking around for some cattle with some greater growth potential in them, and followed the test stations and so forth. And I ran into some cattle out of South Dakota by the name of Erdmans, and a bull called Big John Marshall Pride 4, who was a 6-7 year old bull at the time. And anyway, ended up buying him, and also before that I bought a bull. It was one of the high growth bulls in the country, but called Atlas Marshall. We renamed him Atlas Marshall. He was a very high cut ability, very thick, meaty kind of a bull. And so that's how we got started in it. We came along and bought the Atlas Marshall bull from a commercial man who man that raised him was Wayne Laycock from Farnaville, Iowa. And I didn't have any money at the time. I asked Wayne if he didn't want to own the bull with me. And so together we bought the bull and ended up quadrupling our money, I guess, on him after a short time. But that's how we got help pay for the farm that I bought down in Guthrie County and so forth. And,
so what my dad will not tell you is that when he says he did pretty well on the National College Livestock Judging Team, they were the national champions in 1955. And also Atlas Marshall became one of the sort of main herd bulls, or a predominant herd bull in the country in the, what time period would that have been, the 70s?
Well, early 70s that day he was, and then also I guess another bull that was more prominent probably and well known was a bull called Marshall Pride 4, or Big John, and from a herd in South Dakota that had been testing bulls at Stanford, Montana Production Indexing Center. That's where I happened to pick up the name, and ended up going up there and like the cattle I saw, and the bull I saw right after a snowstorm in early April in 69, I believe, and Wayne Laycock went along with me, and we drove up to Aberdeen in the midst of a snowstorm, and ended up on a railroad track.
I know this story, and they went in the ditch, I think, right? And you ended up in the ditch.
In the ditch, and up on the railroad track was probably 12 feet higher than the highway, and we went up the bank and ended up kitty-cornered, and the railroad track hung up on it. And
in the middle of a blizzard.
Yeah, we sent the people back we had passed us and asked them if they wouldn't stop the train if they could.
Wow.
Anyway, we ended up about 1 o'clock in the morning getting into some town, southern Minnesota, but...
But that was you were buying one of the bulls that became one of your kids.
We were on our way up to Erdmans to take a look at this herd of cattle that we had never seen or nobody else had heard about at that time. And so, even though we got there early, we were there maybe a week or so after American Breeders ABS had been there, maybe a week and week and a half before that, and they had an option to buy the bull. And so we were rather disappointed with that, but the parting comment I had to Mr. Erdman was, I said, well, if there's any reason that he can't take the bull for health reasons or something like that, we want first right of refusal. And as luck had it, well, they vaccinated all the cows and Vibrio and Lepto, and they also vaccinated the bull, so he wouldn't pass lepto-vibrio test, and so I had the option, a chance to pick up my option, and which we did. And the bull went on and was quite popular for a number of years and sired a lot of great cattle.
And you had a lot of, you had offers on him again down the road too, right?
Yeah, I had come in from cultivating one day, and I had a call from one of the lead sale managers at the time, J.B. McCorkle. He had somebody on the, who would give me $125,000 for a third interest in possession of the bull. And the only caveat was they wanted to guarantee him to live 3 years. And I'd already sold an interest to Dr. Hicks in Alabama. And we decided that to guarantee him to live 3 years, he was already 7 years old, was kind of a stretch. And so we declined the offer. And they went up to Erdman's and bought a son of him for $75,000, who turned out being grand champion at the International that next year.
Wow. That's amazing. And was Mom still talking to you after he declined that? I think she was pretty understanding, wasn't she?
Yeah. She continued to put up with me.
So I should... So my mom, Marion Bradford, she also grew up on a farm in northeast Iowa, in a town near the town of Monona. And kind of funny story how they met, because my mom was going to college in Dubuque and ended up being roommates with Dad's sister. And one weekend, I believe, my aunt decided to invite my mom home to the farm for the break or weekend or whatever. And the way I've heard the story is that when the first time my mom met my dad, he was milking a cow and decided to squirt her with milk from the udder, which is, you know, nothing says romance like warm milk on you. So that was how my mom, Mary, met my dad. And you know, that was the journey that began. And as he mentioned, they bought a farm west of Guthrie Center, Iowa, in 1970, using the proceeds from one of those bull sales. Then... You know, probably the biggest thing, other than some of these other bulls that we've talked about, was, of course, the farm crisis. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys navigated that? It was a challenge like it was for everyone.
Yeah, they had a good friend I'd met through the cattle business who was a milling contractor in Colts Neck, New Jersey. He ran an Angus herd, and I met him and got to know him, I think, maybe through the Dorn brothers at Beaver, Iowa. And... So we became good friends, and back in the early 80s there, interest rate, I had brought quite a bit of money and for a farm and so forth, and interest rate went to, I was paying over 18.75%, as I recall, and there's no way that he could make things work with that. So their farm credit was closing down on almost everybody, and other institutions of loaning were also cracking down on them. And so I was kind of, you know, a way to turn on that was going to cash it all in or try to. And finally I thought about my friend in New Jersey, Walt Zimmer, and called him up and asked if he wanted to buy a farm. And so I sold him all the farm except 80 acres where the buildings were and so forth, and kept the cow herd and so the land. And ended up, he got me straightened out, and we 6 years later, I bought him out and started all over again.
That's amazing. And that is why the ranch used to be called Bradford Angus.
Bradford Brothers.
Bradford Brothers originally.
Bradford, yes. Brothers, where the girls do the work.
Yes. So I should explain that, because I haven't said yet that besides doing this, mom and dad doing the farm work, they were raising 9 of us. Yes, you heard that right. 9 children, and 8 of which are girls, which everybody finds fascinating. And now I know you just all said the poor boy. But he turned out okay. This Barry, if you listen to this, Barry is a professor at Michigan State in animal science now. And so he knows how to treat women well. He has to. anyway, they so on top of the, you know, raising these kids in the middle of the farm crisis, and yeah, we were very fortunate that Walter Zimmerer came in, and so the as a thank you, Dad renamed the ranch to Brad Z Ranch in his honor. So that name remains today. And so I want to throw out a couple of other highlights, and you can tell stories about any of them if you'd like, but he won't do this himself because he'll think it's bragging, so I'm going to do it. But Dad was, he served, I think, in the 70s and 80s on the Iowa Beef Industry Board, the National Beef Board, and American Angus Association Board, and you judged a bunch of national, state, and local cattle shows. And I remember when you got to go to travel to Australia to cover the, I think it was the national show in Australia. And then another interesting trip he got to take was, I think it was Governor Branstad went on a trip to Japan and invited some cattle producers along to promote Iowa beef. I would have paid money to see a photo of Dad sitting on the floors with his legs crossed in his cowboy hat, if anyone has one. Do you remember much about that trip? Or?
Oh, not a whole lot. It was enjoyable, and it's quite fascinating, I guess, to visit with a very industrious group of people. It was a very worthwhile trip.
You enjoyed the meeting both the Japanese and Australians, I think. Australians, you felt good about also, right? The country. You got to see a little of the outback, I think, when you were there.
Yeah, we did. I was just there for a couple of weeks in Australia, and they were very, very open, very, very engaging people. They're entrepreneurial. They're entrepreneurial type in their manner, I guess, and they just take everything right in stride. Doesn't seem like anything ever bothered them.
So then I guess I should also mention that you, I think it was last year, you were also inducted to the American Angus Association Heritage Hall of Fame, and Dad is now, you're 86, right? And you probably are all assuming that he's retired or not involved in the cattle, but that is wrong. In fact, he's so stubborn that he would be the one who has to be in the corral pushing the cattle forward up the chute. Whenever we're working cattle, nobody can convince him to try another job there. So am I right that you're stubborn?
Well, I must get it from the kids.
Speaking of kids, I was going to ask about your philosophy of raising kids or cattle, and I think they might be the same, where you don't do the work for them. They're supposed to work for you, right?
That's right.
I can't quite explain your cattle philosophy right. I think I almost have it down, but can you tell what your philosophy of cattle has always been?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, the cattle have to be efficient in terms of conversion of feed to beef and so forth. And one of the highest points in that efficiency also has to be in fertility. And as we tend to move along from larger and larger cattle, and of course we get the cows get bigger and so forth. So I think the challenge lies that we have to probably keep the factory moderate in frame and moderate in size that produces big. It may necessitate using a terminal sire on those moderate frame cows that produce a big product. But the thing, there's some fertility, differences probably. The earlier maturing cattle are probably a little more fertile earlier. The input that takes, if you got a big framed cow, she's growing probably, most all of them are probably growing as a two-year-old, and maybe almost maintain or almost accomplish their mature size, but then the three frames, the four frames, and the five maybe continue to grow on after the second calf, third calf, and maybe even some of the fourth calf. And so the longer they're growing, the more nutritional input we need into them in order to get them rebred. So this is where the challenge lies. And the packer continues to ask for bigger carcasses. I would think that someday the bigger cuts, ribeyes and so forth that evolve would be have more than you'd have demand for that size. They'd have to cut them so thin that takes makes a tough job for the chef to get it done right.
Yeah. And all of those of you listening who are livestock producers will have followed that well. The rest of you, just remember he studied animal science, so he's part professor too. So the other thing I should mention, you and Mom were recognized by the, it was the National Cattlemen's Beef Association with a Regional Environmental Stewardship Award. And I think that was in 2002. And in 2011, you were recognized with an Iowa Master Farmer Award by Wallace's Farmer. So those are, I think probably part of that was how you really believed in sort of having the cattle be part of the environment, not changing nature around you. Is that fair to say, or?
Oh, I expect so. I suppose the main reason is most of these awards, I've outlived most of everybody else, so.
No one was left, huh? Well, I know that the farm where I grew up in Guthrie County that he's talking about is, I guess it's considered an oak savanna is what the, like linked chains of oak trees basically on these rolling hills. And I know that you sort of consider those trees sort of part shelter for the cattle too. And, is that right? In the,
oh, definitely, you know, cattle can take, a lot of cold, especially if they can get out of the wind, but you get a 30 below zero and get a no windbreak and so forth, you know, pretty much freeze anybody up. So think of the energy they expend when they're in a non-sheltered area versus the sheltered. It's immensely different.
Yeah, that's true. So I think I'm trying to think of any other stories we might want to add. I know Mom would say we stopped that you are the cat with nine lives, but we decided you've gone way beyond nine lives on his near disasters on the farm. that hilly land isn't good for driving four-wheelers and trucks and tractors rapidly after cattle without having some incidents. So there's been a few, but yes, I would say that he can outperform me in the cattle lot still at age 86. So I can't talk too much, right?
Oh, we get by.
All right. Is there anything else you want to add, or are we?
No, it's just, I think it's fortunate to be able to raise the family on the farm. You know, I think that the girls were out there every day helping, I guess, when they were growing up. And so I think that there's no substitute for having some work ethic, and they responded well, and that's what kept me out of trouble, was keeping them involved.
You better mention Barry too, so he doesn't feel bad.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I have one that brings to mind one story. There was a so every year we have an annual production sale in March, and there was, I don't even remember who it was now, but they, some partners who had come from a farm or a ranch were looking at buying some cattle but hadn't really decided. And one of them says to the other, oh, we ought to get some of those females. And so when the other one's not around, the second one goes ahead and buys a couple heifers. And, you know, his business partner or relative or whoever it was comes back. And, you know, you remember the rest of the story? He says, what did you buy some for? We weren't even sure we were going to buy anything. And he said, well, you told me, let's get some of those females. And he said, I meant the girls who work so hard. So, but it was good for business that misunderstanding happened, I guess. So, All right. I can't think of anything else, but thank you so much for doing this, and hopefully Paul will be happy with this. So appreciate you doing it.
Well, thank you, and appreciate having you around. She kind of takes care of my book work, and we're getting ready for a sale and advertising and so forth. So she's got a long line that just won't quit.
I take my pay in beef, right? All right. Thanks a lot.
My thanks to Jim Bradford and Colleen Bradford-Krantz for their conversation. And Colleen, you feel better after listening to that again?
Yeah. I'm going to take the blame for the quality not necessarily being perfect on the audio. Paul was not involved in that, so it's what it is.
But it's better than being on the telephone. But you got to sit in the same room with him, and that was good.
That's right. Yes, right at home.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.